Welcome to Evolutions in Organizational Culture, another organizational peak performance product by Arthur F. Kamazi. This series will assist you to evolve your corporate culture to reap the benefits of a super productive and fulfilled workforce. So sit back, listen, and grow.
Greetings. This is Arthur Kamazi. Today we're going to talk about the evolution of organizational culture. But first, what's the point? Why should we learn about corporate culture? What is the benefits of understanding corporate culture? What's in it for us? So, let me ask you a question. Do you enjoy working? Because if you don't go to work and you feel, wow, I mean, this is going to be something amazing. Today, I can probably do great things. Then that means that the culture or the environment of that organization is not really serving you to its maximum potential. See, the best cultures within any group or organization are those cultures which will bring out the best in you. Because sometimes you're going to get lazy. You're going to settle in to the point of least resistance. Your life, if not challenged, will stagnate. And as an individual, as a human being, one of our emotional drivers is the need for excellence, then also the need for growth. We strive to grow as individuals. We strive to do something more than we have ever thought we were capable of. And as we tend to move forward in our lives and mature, the amount of challenge, the amount of personal growth is directly related to the kind of environments we put ourselves into. So, a corporate culture, a positive one, rather than take away from your fulfillment, rather than give you a reason to not be a part of it, will enhance your life and will also help you to enhance the lives of others in that same environment. But that's not always the case, is it? In fact, a positive corporate culture doesn't just help individuals, but it literally creates an environment where everyone brings out the best in each other. But there aren't that many very positive corporate cultures. And that's why, in order to make a difference, in order to change things, in order to make progress in our environments and our work, we must learn the five evolutions of organizational cultures and how to influence those cultures to evolve. So let's look at the five evolutions of corporate culture.
Welcome back to part one of Evolutions in Organizational Culture by Arthur F. Kamazi. Sit back, listen, and grow.
What we're going to talk about now is the different kinds of corporate cultures. So, the bottom of the barrel, the most disgusting, despicable, most wretched culture that you can possibly find in any organization, the one that literally sucks the life out of you, is called the blame culture. See, this is the culture where everybody is blaming everybody else. It's never anybody's fault. It's always because this person didn't do that, or that client didn't fill out the paperwork properly, or they didn't finish their job correctly, or the report is wrong, or there's always a reason why things didn't get done. There's always a reason why you are not able to accomplish what you need to accomplish. And throughout the entire process of trying to do your job, there is hardly ever any fulfillment, simply because the gratification of what you're doing is hardly ever noticed. And you just don't see the challenge. You don't see the potential for yourself you have no fulfillment that is carried over into your home, or when you, in fact, when you get home, what do you feel? You feel, oh my gosh, guy, you know, I'm glad work is over. And then you have to get up the next morning again, you go, oh, I gotta go to work. So, the blame culture. It is where people do not accept responsibility for their own actions. And see, the problem with the blame culture is the very fact that because people don't take responsibility, it creates a situation where it becomes difficult to change. Why? Because it's always somebody else's fault. Now, in directive communication, we know for a fact that environment actually brings out different facets of who you are. Just because you are not taking responsibility in a blame culture does not mean that you are an irresponsible person. It simply means that the environment brings out the aspect of irresponsibility in you. So, how does a responsible individual get sucked into the blame culture? Well, consider this. Every time that something bad happens in your life, what do? You try to avoid it, you try to make it better, you try to have that bad thing not happen in your life, right? So, in the blame culture, most people, when they get into it, are completely adverse to it. They don't want it. So, what do? They try to. Some people will try to fix it. But the thing is that culture in itself is so difficult to change. It is so difficult to move without the right strategies, without the right psychology. It is almost an impossible task. So most people will fail. And no matter how hard they try, they keep trying over and over again, the culture itself does not move. So, as discouragement sets in, they will either do one of two things. They will either quit and find something different, or they will be assimilated, sucked into the culture. Or they may try to ignore it, to run away from it. It's not happening. It is not something real. I can live in my own little world and avoid the blame culture. But eventually, the way that they react to the people within the culture is going to bring them right back, and they're going to get sucked into the blame culture just like everybody else did. By now you're probably thinking, man, you know, if I'm in a blame culture, there's nothing I can do. I'm just going to have to live with it. I'm going to have to suck up and just be there and be unfulfilled. But no, that's not true, because there is hope. See, how does a blame culture get formed? It is not formed by a whole bunch of hopeless people getting together and creating a culture. It is formed by the reactions that people have to other people within the organization. Now, leadership does play a major role. For example, if a leader is in a position where he'll choose somebody and he will mess with them because of a mistake they made, okay, nobody wants to be in that position. So what do? They pass blame. If a leader creates a situation where making a mistake or doing something that is outside of policy or acting on impulse outside of a specific structure, if a leader or the policies of an organization create that kind of a situation, you are ready to develop a blame culture. Why? Because people inevitably will make mistakes. And when somebody makes a mistake, there will be a reaction. The question is, what kind of a reaction are we going to be looking for? The question is, what kind of a reaction will actually happen? Is it one where people will basically do anything to get from being called into the boss's office and being reprimanded? Or by being told off by their supervisor? Or by being put down for trying something new that maybe didn't work? What kind of a reaction would you have in any of these situations? If we are going to cultivate a culture that is positive, we must be aware of the reactions that happen when you, as an individual, will take certain actions. See, even if you're not the primary leader, even if you're not the big boss, even if you are just an average person working with 1,000 other average people that is in middle management or even a frontline staff, your reaction will affect corporate culture. By understanding the reactions, by understanding why they happen and why they have an effect and why people literally react in certain ways rather than acting intelligently, you can influence the culture. And even better, you can influence others to also influence the culture. Eventually, you can create a chain reaction change that will improve the culture. That brings us to the next step, the next evolutionary step in organizational culture, and that is the multi-directional culture.
Welcome back to part 2 of Evolutions in Organizational Culture by Arthur F. Kamazi. Sit back, listen, and grow.
So the next step in evolution, the multi-directional culture. Now people have reduced the amount of blaming. There is a little bit more cooperation, but that cooperation remains only within specific departments. It's not cross-departmental. The departments themselves have established small cliques. People work with each other, but only within the department, and they trust primarily their scope of reality more so than the other departments within the organization. They think they're most important. So, what ends up happening is that you've got all these different departments that have their individual goals that are trying to accomplish something within the scope of what the company is trying to accomplish, but the cross-departmental cooperation is minimal. And then, of course, you have each specific and separate department going in their own direction. So even though the organization or the company may have a unified goal, the departments have their own goals, they have their own agendas, and they do not achieve or they are not able to effectively move towards what the organization is trying to accomplish. Okay? This is caused through a lot of reasons. Okay? Number one, the people within the departments usually will have one specific or will dominantly have one specific style of processing information. Many of them may have the same colored brain, for example. Okay, the other thing is that, of course, the people within that department, they form close bonds, so they have a sense of belonging with each other. And others that are outside of that group do not share in the same kind of perspective or the same kind of closeness that they do. So what do we do about it? How can we bring a multi-directional culture to the next level? Awareness of interaction, awareness of how people within groups actually will support each other. Even though there are separate groups within the same group, each group affects the other group in a very profound way. So, how do we bring this awareness to the people within these individual cliques, within these individual departments? Awareness of the colored brain, awareness of the emotional drivers, of how they affect people within the group, and even more specifically, how the group itself can actually get more accomplished, can get more personal fulfillment from working with other departments. See, part of the problem is that because certain departments will have many of the same colored brains, they tend to look at other departments as those who don't understand them, who don't appreciate them, who don't really see the importance of the work they are doing, and they just want to get their own way. Well, this happens a lot in many, many different companies. So, by cultivating the awareness of the colored brain and the emotional drivers and how those interact, each department will have a clearer vision, a clearer understanding of why those departments, of why the other people in those departments are potentially not cooperating, or are potentially trying to get what they're trying to get, or are acting or reacting in a specific way, which is the primary reason why they react, and therefore there is little cooperation, and they go in their own directions. Even though sometimes they are mandated to go with them, the amount of effort they actually put into it is much less because they're not really that motivated, because they don't understand. They just say, okay, this is what I have to do, instead of this is what I really think that I should do, or this is really something that's going to help me and the organization. And by cooperating, I understand why these people want this. By cultivating the understanding of why the organization, why the different departments are acting or reacting, individuals within departments will be more open to cooperation. In directive communication courses, we often play what we call the colored business game. This game profoundly impacts the mindset and the perception of people, how and why these people would actually benefit from cooperation, how they can actually see cooperation across departments in a much more self-fulfilling way. And through this personal awareness, the organization can grow and the culture can evolve, at least to the next step. And that next step is the live and let live culture.
Welcome back to part 3 of Evolutions in Organizational Culture by Arthur F. Kamazi. Sit back, listen, and grow.
Now we're at the live and let live culture. This is the middle of the road. This is where many companies sit at. It's basically the complacency culture. People are doing okay, the company's doing fine, there is cooperation, there is not really too much blaming, although it still exists. But it's just there. People get up, they go to work, and it's not really bad, it's just part of the day. It's not really good either. And what ends up happening is that the complacency eventually planes out. And through complacency, in any organization, will start to decline. The culture itself, in a state of staticness, or in the culture itself, in a static state, will not improve, will not evolve, will not develop, and therefore productivity will be at a standstill. It still exists. People still do what they're supposed to, but not in a very excited way, not in an excellent way, not in a way that really sets them apart from anybody else. They are, in fact, just one of the crowd, one of millions of companies out there who really have no sense of excellence, one of millions of companies out there that have no real position as an organization that people really want to be a part of, as an organization of excellence, of superiority. They're just average. And a lot of people take this as normal, as the way that it is, as a job that they must do in order to survive. But where's the passion? It's not there. Passion is usually found elsewhere, at home. maybe with family, maybe with hobbies, but seldom at work in a culture of this nature. So what do we do? See, here we've already overcome some of the difficulties, right? We've already overcome the blame culture to a certain degree, not completely. We have already overcome the multi-directional culture. There is cooperation within departments. It may not be great, but it does exist. So, the next step to overcoming the live and let live culture is alignment. It is to get people to perceive their own personal lives, their own personal goals, their personal fulfillment to be aligned with what the organization is trying to do. How do you do it? Well, see, remember, every organization, every culture is a set of reactions to the situation, to other people, to policies, and those reactions cultivate the way that people react to each other and consistently make a chain reaction that, in essence, makes this culture. So, to create an alignment, you got to find out what people really want. Or actually, you have to help people to find out what they really want. See, most people, even at home, they don't know what they're really trying to achieve. They don't know what they're really trying to get out of life. Most people have an idea, they have some goals, they have some plans, but do they really know, do they have a real understanding of their values, of who they are, of their own individual identities as people? Most don't. So by assisting people to discover their identity as individuals and find the commonalities, or I should say, help them find the commonalities between their own identity, the ideal person that they personally want to become, compared to what the organization is trying to become. And use each policy, each step in cultivating that organization's development as a stepping stone to cultivating their own ideal self, their own ideal identity, which in essence creates fulfillment for them, and not just at home. See, because when the organization and the individual are aligned, that means the person themselves feel like, hey, I'm getting something more than just a paycheck from this company. I am getting the ability, the assistance, if you will, to become more than I can by myself. I am using the organization, the culture, the resources to become more of the person with the right kinds of emotional gratifications, with the right kind of attitudes, with the right kind of being that I want to be. So that alignment cultivates greater fulfillment in and out of work. And that takes an individual and an organization to the next step, which is the cultivation of the brand congruent culture.
Welcome back to part 4 of Evolutions in Organizational Culture by Arthur F. Gamazi. Sit back, listen, and grow.
In the evolution of corporate cultures, the brand congruent culture is very high on the scale. Within it, individuals have a greater purpose than just their job. They actually believe in what the organization is trying to do, whether it be provide a product or a service, and they align themselves with what that organization is promising together with that product or service. That means that people really take ownership in the organization and what it represents, what it stands for. A person's individual identity is aligned already with what the organization's promise to the customers is. And because of that, as an employee tries to develop, as a person does his job, the everyday actions that he takes fulfill his emotional needs. And through the organization and its promises, through what that organization is trying to accomplish, through the greater purpose that is provided for each employee, or at least most of them, people cooperate with each other. Why? Because they have the same greater purpose. They may be filling their emotional drives in a different way, but it's through the same greater purpose. And through that purpose, there is greater fulfillment. So when people wake up in the morning, it's not like, oh my gosh, I gotta go to work. It's like, wow, you know, what can I learn today? What can I accomplish today? What is it that I am able to do today that is going to carry me forward? And that me is represented through the actions, through the work that they actually do in their organization. Me and the organization become one. So the brand congruent culture cultivates a whole new type of environment. One where cooperation is not just people cooperating with each other, but working together for something greater than themselves. It sets a foundation to create something even bigger. And that bigger, that new evolution, is the leadership enriched culture.
Welcome back to part 5 of Evolutions in Organizational Culture by Arthur F. Kamazi. Sit back, listen, and grow.
And now we have reached the top of the corporate culture evolutionary scale, the leadership-enriched culture. Now, according to directive communication, a leader's purpose is not to create followers, but to develop leaders and develop leadership in the people around them. This can only be done through a greater awareness of environment, how environment affects every single individual within that organization, and how a leader can inspire every single one of them. Now you're saying, well, gosh, but everybody's got different things that they're motivated by. Everybody's got different ideas of what's right and what's wrong. Everybody's different. And, you know, they're all going to have different ideas. That is absolutely true. Yet, inspiration, and inspiration through a greater leader, is not based on specific, but on the emotional intangibles of how a group reacts to itself. So, a leadership-enriched culture is where every individual sees the responsibility and acts on it in developing the kind of environment that brings out the best in every other person. Where each person takes that responsibility, and every single day a person sees how they can improve themselves and improve their environment in such a way where everybody benefits. Now, how would you like to be involved? How would you like to be immersed in that kind of an environment? It brings out the best, the highest standards of an individual. And people like to have that brought out in them. Because as human beings, we tend to perform at the lowest level that the environment provides. And with a leadership-enriched environment, that lowest level is the highest that you will find in most any environment. And the thing is that this kind of environment is not just one that can be cultivated at work. It can be created at home. It can be created with friends. Literally an environment where every individual sees and takes the responsibility, becomes aware of the technology behind making it happen. As human beings, we tend to perform at the lowest level that an environment provides. And within a leadership-enriched culture, we become aware of that environment in the absolute sense and take responsibility for that awareness. It's not just knowing something and going, oh, okay, this is why it happens, but literally take the responsibility to make it better, to bring out not just the best in yourself, because you can't do that. You must literally use the knowledge, use the awareness, use the directive communication psychology to bring out the best in the environment, meaning the other people within that environment, and by very virtue of that, by leading them to something greater, you as an individual benefit because they give it back to you. Every single time. Why? Even if they don't do it on purpose, simply the type of reaction that they have to a leadership-enriched individual will be enough to bring you to a higher level. And the more people that are aware of the technology, of the psychology behind it, more people that are aware of themselves and their own actions and reactions, and more people that take the responsibility to become leadership-enriched, the greater and the higher level of excellence that everyone in that environment will attain. So, this has been the five levels of cultural evolution within an organization. I do hope that this gives you some kind of an insight, and hope that this will be able to assist you in cultivating the kind of environment that will bring your life and your work to the highest levels of performance that life has to offer. Thank you.